Hi, this is Matt DeLong from Ridge Cider Company in Grant, Michigan, and you are listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 127. Hello and welcome to Cider Chat. My name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. And this week, we are in the heartland of America in Michigan. Actually, well, I guess the western part of the state, you might say, a little north of Grand Rapids, speaking with Matt DeLong of Ridge Cider Company. There's going to be more with Matt coming up, but before then, it's news out and about in Ciderville. It's time to go to the winner's circle for some of the cider festivals and also cider competitions. I want to make note that Ross on Y, who's on the Cider Going Up campaign at Cider Chat, the Patreon page, well, they just won a third prize at the Big Apple Cider Trial for their draft dry cider. And they're going to be putting in some more ciders, I believe, at the competition coming up in Herefordshire, too, on May 16th. That's going to be held at the Cider Museum in Herefordshire. So if you're cruising through that area, make sure you go there. And make sure you start putting it in your date book now for a Totally Cider Tour going to the UK next spring. Stay tuned for that. Oh, wait a minute. Oh, okay, I hear you, Wild Yeast. You are in the recording room in the cider house right now. Mr. Quince, can you show them the door?
My pleasure.
Sorry, Rhea, it was my fault. We were just playing in the orchard.
That's okay, Medlars, but last week I got really taken off task and I forgot to mention that the Totally Cider Tour to Normandy was on and that between now and May 31st, there is still time to register. This is important for folks to know because people are still trying to figure out if they could go. That trip is taking place the last week of September, and we have a nice group signed up, but there is still room for more, and I'm hoping that people will consider either coming along or telling friends that they know to sign up now. And I didn't get to mention that last week because I got thrown way off on the cider trail. So, yes, please show them the door.
Yes, we will.
Thank you, Medlars. Now go on. Shush, shush, you guys. And for everybody listening out there, yes, the Totally Cider Tour to Normandy is heading out the last week of September, and we are open. The registration is open, so please go to the Totally Cider page at ciderchat.com to register and let your friends know about this trip that is still open and waiting for you to sign up. Okay, getting back to some of the winners for cider competitions, I want to definitely make mention of Anne Marie and David Thornton at the James Creek Cider House in Moore County, North Carolina. They entered some ciders at the Seattle Cider Awards that's held out in the Pacific Northwest, and they took home a whole bunch of medals. So if you get the opportunity to try some of the James Creek cider, I don't think whether it's a medal winner or not, don't matter. Pick one up and check out their cider. Wonderful people. I do plan on having them on the podcast at some point. Would love to go to their location. Check it out, James Creek Cider House, and I'll put a link in the show notes to those folks. And then next Monday, I set off on a journey called To Glint Cap or Bust. We are leaving on Monday evening, myself and the team from New England, to drive out to Glint Cap. It will arrive sometime on Tuesday. We'll be going to Uncle John's Hard Cider. That's with Mike Beck. For dinner, then rolling into Grand Rapids. And I'm going to be recording along the way. So do check that out. I'm going to be doing that via Cider Chat Live. That is a new secondary podcast that I put up where I'm able to, via this app, plop it out. And the app is called Anchor. So if you join Anchor and you subscribe to Cider Chat Live, you'll get a notification when I put that out. And my plan, my hope, my best wildest, you know, hope is to have some regular posts going out. And that's unedited, unscripted. There's two episodes up right now, and it is available on iTunes. I made mention of this in the past two podcasts. I just put up a recording from the 23rd annual Boston Homebrew Competition that's put on by the Homebrew Club known as the Boston Wort, that's spelled W-O-R-T, Processors. And I was judging there on Saturday, which was May 5th, and there is some amazing news coming out of this. Okay, so this is primarily a beer competition, both also including cider and mead. Now, there weren't a huge amount of cider entries in the general scheme of things, but for a beer competition, not bad. And guess what cider category won the best in show for cider? It was a New World cider. Next week on Cider Chat, we're going to have the maker as a featured guest. And I might actually be sending that episode out early, maybe on Tuesday, for all the folks heading to Glencap next week to be able to listen to that, because it's really cool. I mean, this is someone who considers himself an amateur cider maker, and he really delivered. I've already recorded the chat. The fellow's name is Tom Bell, and we're going to be featuring him next week so you could hear exactly how he made this cider. I think he has some fantastic tips for cider makers, whether you're commercial or not. The other thing I did for the Cider Chat Live was I was judging that Best in Show for the cider category, and I recorded the entire judging. I edited just a little bit because there is time for you to like checking notes, and there's pouring, and people are kind of meditating over the ciders. And brought to you the conversation of that actual judging, which I think is really valuable. It's not a huge, long podcast to listen to. I think it's about, I don't know, is it even 18 minutes? I have no idea right now. But it's worth it if you have any kind of curiosity what happens during a competition. This will give you a good idea about what goes on. Now, I am hoping to do this with other competitions, and finding out that actually this isn't always allowed. So I'm trying to get some more information about that, because in my mind, I think it's a great thing for cider to kind of unveil what is happening during a competition in hopes that you, Ciderville, might feel more inclined, one, to enter into a competition, and two, to become a judge or a steward, and to get involved, because it's a way to really kind of sit down after all the hard work that makers have been doing over the past year or 2 years and really delve into the cider a little bit deeper. I used to be a little like, competitions, rah, 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 rah. But now I feel a little bit different. I'm doing actually three competitions. I just did this last one. Next week I'll be judging at Glencap. Unless they make me a steward, I'll do anything. You know, really, I'll do anything just to help a competition succeed. And then I'm going to be at another competition coming up. So cool, cool stuff there. And stay tuned for next week with Tom Bell, the Best in Show. Oh, I didn't even say. Oh, this is a crazy news. Check it out. Drum roll, please. Okay, so at the Boston Homebrew Competition, not only did Tom win Best in Show for his cider, he won third place in, well, it's kind of a weird thing because it's not Best in Show for beer, but his cider. It's kind of like Thomas duking it out. His cider was up against 37 beers. A Goose won first place and a Pilsner won second place. And then a New World cider won third place in a predominantly beer competition. Now, if that doesn't catch your breath, I I don't know, you're not listening to the right podcast, because that just like makes my head kind of like spontaneously combust when I think about that. And I think it speaks volumes for this competition held in Boston. Getting to know some of the folks who run it, I mean, they are just top-notch quality. And the cool thing, it was all held at the Sam Adams Design Center. And we had the whole floor. So there's some photos already up at the Cider Chat Facebook page about that competition, which was really neat. And then Tom sent me some more photos. So again, next week, more on all that. But I just want you to put that in your little cider cup right now and think about the fact that a new world cider, maybe, I don't know, sometimes I think actually it wasn't really a new world cider, but whatever. A cider, we'll just say that, one, third best in show and overall at the home at a homebrew competition. Wow. Okay, I just have to take a little pause here, and then we'll be right back with more news out there in Ciderville. Make sure that you know about some cider festivals that are happening out there. There are many happening, but just here's two to consider. One is the Pressed Fest, and this is going to be happening on June 9th in Longmont, Colorado. It takes place from 2 to 6 p.m., so there is a link in the show notes to that. I like the name of that, the Pressed Fest, so Colorado. Which is a beautiful area. Longmont is to the west of Denver. So you could even like fly into Denver and head out that way. Pretty easy. And then, of course, just going back to Michigan, where I'll be next week, it's the Michigan Cider Week all week long. And I am going to be at the Gillette Bridge Cider Fest, which is taking place from 1 to 5 p.m. It's actually going to be on the Gillette Bridge going right across the river in downtown Grand Rapids. I'll have a little table there, hopefully meeting you, doing mini recordings and just chit-chatting, talking about the Totally Cider Tour and enjoying the scene. All the Michigan cideries are going to be serving and pouring. It's going to be a lot of fun. Again, that's from 1 to 5 p.m. So do look for a link in the show notes to that. You have to get your tickets ahead of time. So make sure, well, you don't have to. I mean, you could get them at the door too, right, or the gate. But it always makes sense to get your tickets ahead of time to an event like this. And I'm sure it's going to be a fantastic time because the Michigan Cider Makers, they really have it going on. And then I'm going to be home for a week, kind of catching up on life. And then big news for me is that I am headed to Ontario. I'm going to be meeting up with Ryan Monkman, who is helping me get up there and to do a tour about to all the different cideries. So I'll be going through the full list coming up, but Ryan and I, we're going to be podcasting live and chit-chatting. This area is kind of like the Napa Valley of Ontario, as some people call it. So I'll be going over the border in Niagara Falls region, meeting up with Ryan, and then getting to chit-chat with Canadian cider makers, putting them in the spotlight, at least for that province. I know there's a lot more going on over in Quebec and Nova Scotia and out in British Columbia and everywhere in between, but I am really feeling relief, to tell you the truth, to be able to finally get some Canadian makers on the podcast and to have an opportunity to hang out with Ryan Monkman. Wow. You should check out his Instagram feed. I'll definitely have a link in the show notes there. He is quite a maker and just really offers up this almost poetic Instagram writings and photos. So looking forward to that. When we come back next, we're going to be going to Ridge Cider in Grant, Michigan, and speaking with Matt DeLong. was pre-recorded at CiderCon held in Baltimore, Maryland in 2018. We begin this chat with Matt and I discussing the location of the cidery in the big state of Michigan. So we're going to be talking a little bit about it in terms of position on your hand, or what folks locally call the mitt. So keep up with us here. And now let's grab a glass and head over to this chat with Matt DeLong of Ridge Cider Company.
Ridge Cider is in Grant, Michigan, which is about 25 or 30 minutes due north of Grand Rapids.
Let's talk about it in terms of the classic way of the mitt.
Sure.
Is it a right-handed mitt or a left-handed mitt?
Oh, man, I always use my left-hand backhand.
Left-hand backhand facing me? So
yes.
I'm looking at your left hand.
Yep, and that way I can use my dominant hand to point
out the different
areas of Michigan.
All right, well, I think we'll get that virtually. So looking at your hand, where is it on your hand then? So.
It's about mid-mitten.
Mid-mitten?
Yep, but on the west side.
On the west side.
About 16 miles from Lake Michigan.
16 miles from Lake Michigan. Do you get a lot of lake effect snow?
We do. Kind of makes it special during the spring.
Big thaw?
Yeah, yep. Definitely unique for the Ridge area growing fruit.
That's right. Yeah, because it's a big fruit-growing state.
Yeah.
I know that very well, and certainly a lot of that, from what I understand, is apples is your number one fruit commodity.
That's right.
That's right. You're 60 miles from Lake Michigan. What is the population of the town that you're based in?
You know, the town we're based in is Grant, Michigan. I don't know the exact population, but it is rather small. You know, when I share it with people, they don't necessarily know where it's at, and that's why I share it's about 25, 30 minutes north of Grand Rapids. But I'm not sure the exact population on it. It's a small town.
Yeah, under 10,000?
I would say so.
Okay. Greater than 5,000?
Yes, definitely.
Okay, so in between.
Yeah.
All right, okay. And somebody in Grant, Michigan is like, count me. Okay. And is it a farming community?
It's absolutely a farming community. You know, as you go further north, you get into more crops, commodities, and dairy.
Uh-huh.
But if you're Grant's kind of the northern edge of the Ridge area, the apple fruit growing region there. And Grant down south, roughly 20 miles south, is just a long stretch of apple orchards.
So when you say the Ridge, it's not a mountain ridge, it's the ridge of a plateau where something is grown and something isn't grown.
Exactly.
Is that right?
And the reason why it's named that, because it's a series of higher elevations relative to the surrounding areas that allows apples to be grown without being lost every single year to a frost.
Mm. Well, that's really handy dandy.
Yeah. You know, and when they first cleared the ridge, when everybody came over, it was a little bit of everything in terms of what was being grown from animals to different crops. But over the years, apples have primarily taken over. So, you know, about 95% of the ridge area is apple production, which is responsible for about 70% of the apple production coming out of Michigan.
Wow. Well, that's a lot of pride right there for folks.
Yeah.
How many grocery stores do you have in Grant?
One.
One, okay.
Yeah, we could put it that way. Yeah. Grant's got one stoplight and one grocery store.
Nice. Nice. So you could kind of drive through town in like a second and
exactly.
And not
you
know
could
that you
miss
did.
It if you're not paying attention.
Except that it also has a cidery with a tasting room.
That's correct.
Which is a very good thing to have that we're learning as in the cider trade. Is the tasting room and the cidery right next to each other, I'm assuming?
Yep, it's all in one building, one facility. Yep.
And in downtown Grant or like on the outskirts? You gotta drive.
It'd be on
downtown.
The outskirts, yeah. So we're just before Grant. So we happen to be on a route that is popular, well, all times of the year mostly, but a lot of people for their lake cottages. It's a very, it's an area full of lakes, and so it brings a lot of activity and adventure all times of the year. So just before Grant, which is great because if you're headed through it, that means you're headed north, and so people stop in and are very, new people will be surprised that there's something as unique of an experience that we offer in that area. So they're able to come fill up their growlers, their howlers, grab a six-pack, do a flight, grab a pint, take a tour at the beginning of their adventure for the weekend.
That is a full-stop cidery.
Yeah.
And you are the you know, brainstorm kind of hutsa-putsa behind this.
Yes. You know, I grew up in a town about 20 minutes north of Grant called Fremont, which is also a little bit of apple country, not quite considered the ridge area, but still prominent for apples. I grew up making fresh cider my entire life, but during those years, I also learned what would happen to it if it were to sit around. That intrigued me. That was hard cider, or apple wine, as I would call it, during that time, because hard cider, to me, at that age, I didn't know it was an option. I didn't know it was a product out there, and it wasn't much of one. Mm-hmm. But over the years of doing that every single year as a tradition with my family and through the orchards, I grew a great passion for it and thought I wanted to be a winemaker, maybe have a vineyard. Started spending my time during my later years of high school kind of planning what I would do to make that dream come true.
Wow.
Well, I got distracted by another adventure, videography, post-production, but which also accents what we're doing now. But through those years of traveling, I got to also visit Northern California, Southern California, and travel a little bit around. During that time, continuing my tradition as I visit home in the family home in the orchards and continuing to make hard cider that others would like, friends and family would like, and learned quickly, you know, 2009, 2010, that there were hard ciders popping up and they were on shelves, and there were a cidery up north of me and there was a cider south of me, and I said, what is going on? That's something that people like. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, from abroad, on a broad level, yeah, who knew? Here I thought I was trying to learn more about grapes with that intention, but really I should have just been concentrating, well, people like this, why isn't it something on the shelves? And so at that point I quickly kind of shifted gears in terms of my intentions of my profession, and started producing bulk raw cider under the Ridge LLC. Probably needed some kind of license for that, but I didn't. And the only intention of doing that was to provide bulk raw cider to other breweries and wineries for their use, to create some relationships, learn about the business, learn about equipment, learn about what they're doing, make a little revenue to some seed money for a hard cidery. Mm-hmm. It was during that time I filed for my small winemaker's license and quickly became, found our facility, all under one roof, from squeezing apples to our tap room to the fermentation and the bottling, all right there. So it happened quite rapidly.
So that building... well, actually, I want to step back a little bit before I talk about the building. I'm just kind of curious. What were you pressing that fresh-pressed apple juice originally on? What kind of press?
Oh, it is about a 120-year-old press that is driven by an authentic mill.
Ooh.
Is
wow.
South of Grand Rapids.
Wow.
And right there is a ton of history.
Yeah.
A lot of... just a lot of romantic stories and history surrounded by apples and fresh cider. It was a cider mill south of Grand Rapids that's historic in in West Michigan.
It's okay. Is it still being used today?
It is still being used today, not necessarily to commercially produce fresh cider, but more as a representation. It is active,
it was. Wow.
And it's a place you could visit and have hard cider and kind of see how how that press is driven and all the people that bring their apples by to get pressed.
And what's the name of that mill?
It's called Bowen's Mills.
Bowen's Mills. And is that a water wheel kind of?
That is a water wheel.
No way. Oh, jeez. Yep. Road
a dam,
trip.
A water wheel.
We could have done this podcast in your backyard.
Oh, man.
Wow. It,
that only incubated my passion for diving into this industry. I spent every day there, a lot of time there, and again, just really incubated the idea of creating a real, natural, delicious hard cider available to a wider audience than I was producing for the years growing up.
Now, while you were doing all this, and you know, there's a mill, and I know there's a lot of history for cider in Michigan. But did you have kindred spirits surrounding you who were like, yeah, go mad, and I know exactly what you want to go? Or were you kind of feeling like you're floating out there, you know, like a, I don't know, snowflake in the sky, just finding a place to land?
Yes. A little bit of both.
Okay.
I definitely have...
Not that you're a snowflake at all. I can tell you are not a snowflake, dude. You are like...
But at many times it did feel that way, you know. Yeah. I knew there was an opportunity. I knew that the category was rising and the popularity around it. Mm-hmm. I saw a void there that I feel still strongly that we will fill and are slowly filling in terms of what kind of product and liquid we're producing. But during that time, you know, I had great supporters. At the time was my girlfriend and now my wife, my strongest supporter.
What's her name?
Valerie.
Valerie, okay.
Yep.
Way to go, Valerie.
Yeah. Yeah, if it wasn't for her, I probably would have maybe continued with my other ventures. But so definitely she was on the supportive side and the others saying, well, where is it? Where's the market? What's the market doing? Mm-hmm. How many people are going to want this? Mm-hmm. Is this a niche idea? Mm-hmm. So on and so forth. But through further investigation and learning about the Michigan Cider Association, and some of the other cideries in the area and speaking with them, visiting with them, and just seeing how forthcoming everybody was and sharing what they're doing and how they're doing it and where they started, where they're at now, where they expected to go, it further inspired my intentions.
Well, it sounds like you made the right choice, no doubt. No looking back.
Yes, definitely looking back. And, you know, those ups and downs just kind of add to the story. Even though during those downs, you just kind of wonder what's going on. But I think we can all agree that right now it's an exciting time, especially because, you know, with everybody wanting to have something real, something authentic, something natural, you know, us producers, cider makers and orchardists can really create that from the dirt all the way down to the bottle, and give people something real.
Yeah, absolutely. So you found this building, which was what in the past?
Originally the building is an onion building. Grant's also, well, mostly in the past was famous for its onion production.
Is there a special characteristic of an onion building that I would not know?
Well, I wouldn't
versus
call it
a tobacco barn. Tobacco barns are very specific on how they open, so
sure.
For drying, is that
no, I wouldn't call it special. I would call it kind of... and unfortunate circumstances that there was no floor drains in the entire building.
Mm.
There was no need for them. It was purely storage for them. And that was an 8-inch cement. So some of you guys renovating your spaces or ahead of you or behind you, that was not an easy task to renovate that for large amounts of liquid.
Cutting into the cement and running lines.
Cutting into the cement.
8 inches, yeah, a lot of dust.
Breaking it up, tearing it out, you know, and that was just for the drains. And so we didn't do the entire floor. So you got the rest of the floor going every which way, but towards the drain. So I think we can all relate to some of the small renovations to make means to an end, you know, to get your product rolling.
Wow.
And how difficult that can be.
Wow. So what is your capacity for your cidery?
Yeah. So we're pressing our whole fruit, our whole apples, right from the beginning, all the way down to the fermentation and bottling.
But buying apples from an area? Or
so we're partnered with a farm right in the Ridge area. About 800 acres of trees and 20 different varieties.
Only 800 acres?
Only Jeez. 800.
Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't really sound like enough to me, but...
That gives us about 20 different varieties. We have access to you know, a lot of those, like you'll find, are made for fresh market. But because some of these trees are older, we're getting some of those with higher acid levels and some more interesting characteristics rather than just sugar. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, of course, is having that access allows us to go through the course of a year with a little bit more confidence in how we might bridge through the summer. So this exciting partnership and ensures our one of our attributes about our approach to cider is sticking to whole fruit at all times. That's what we love, that's what we personally enjoy, and that's what we feel is a great representation of the hard cider category, is using real fruit all the time.
As opposed to
maybe imported juice or concentrates, and there's cider being made that way, and there's a customer base for that. We feel we have found a group of customers that want something a little drier, mm-hmm. a little cleaner, a little more natural, and that's what we're doing.
Well, now you've got me thirsty, so why don't we crack one of these open here?
Yeah, we should.
I have this little...
Oh, perfect. You're
here
prepared.
Here we go. Yeah,
all right.
You know,
so
don't leave home without one.
What we have here today are three bottles, or 12-ounce glass bottles, in our packaging. They come in six-pack form. Mm-hmm. And these are the three that we led off with, and we decided to go with these by simply our data from our taproom, the customers telling us what they like and showing us what they like. And so all three are... next to almost zero residual sugar, fermented to dry. And so you're getting a very clean, crisp experience from these. Even the one that we have here that is a raspberry hard cider is still considered dry. And real raspberries, you're getting some of the tartness. Our next one is hopped. We're dry hopping that. So you're just getting some of the citrus and fruity aromas and flavors from the hops that we're introducing into the cider. And then our flagship was what we call our porch sitting, notes of vanilla and cinnamon, real vanilla beans, real cinnamon sticks, just kind of infused for a subtlety, nice. Very key on subtlety. So you got a nice balance between mm-hmm. What the apples have done and mm-hmm. some of the introductions. So this first one I've just opened is our porch sitting. Again, just notes of vanilla and cinnamon, considered a dry hard cider.
Porch sitting. Here you go. There's a glass for you.
Yes, of
course. I know you're thirsty too. And I want to say this is a very whimsical label that you have here in a way. I mean, it's whimsical, but not. It looks like you have the latitude and longitude on the side right next to Ridge, which is 43 and 85.
Yep.
But the label itself is white, and if you're familiar with topographical maps, it has the lines. What do you call those squiggly lines there?
Topography lines.
Topography lines.
Yep. Just really noting the different elevations relative to the area that we're in. Again, that's what makes the Ridge unique for growing fruit, specifically apples, mm-hmm. is those higher elevations, less prone to getting frozen out or frostbite during the early spring.
Early spring. And the label itself has like a ridge on it. It's kind of wavy, if you will. So it's not a straight, round, you know, linear label on the top. That's a little bit of the whimsical. It's really...
Yeah, it's different. We get a lot of compliments on that and ask how we did it. And for the folks that are listening that are from the industry and kind of wondering what we're talking about, we simply got a die cut tooled for the label itself. So that is for all three of the bottles.
Yeah, it stands out in the shelf, I'm sure. So I want to just talk about what I'm seeing in this cider here. It's very bright, you know, in terms of the clarity, absolute clarity there. A very light straw, and the pour was, you know, you're having that little bit of a petulant, you know, mm-hmm. going on. And then the taste, I'm going to taste again here because,
mm.
the dryness. That you're using the real vanilla beans there.
Yep.
It's very subtle, so it's not overwhelming. So I want Ciderville, who's listening out there, to know that this is not like a sweet sweet. This is, I wouldn't even call it like a semi-dry.
No,
we don't.
And, you know, this cider conference, you know, there's consideration of different scales to go by. But simply, we are displaying in some fashion on our bottles for the customers to understand what they're getting before their purchase, that just kind of a five ticker option between dry and sweet. And we have that ticked on fully. Fully dry.
Fully dry.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did.
Which technically it is fermented to dry and no added sugar whatsoever or any kind of sweetener.
It feels like a really healthy kind of cider to drink.
And we hear that a lot, you know, and we love hearing that because that's what we're about, is a natural, clean experience in a hard cider.
With the apple coming forward, the little bit of spices that you have there are just in the backdrop. A nice example of what you could do with a cider. And I love the packaging because it's not a 750 ml bottle, and I could grab that six pack in front of me and throw it in my car or on my boat and be able to enjoy that and have that bottle to myself. I don't necessarily have to feel bad about opening that 750 ml bottle and saying, oh, darn, nobody here to enjoy it.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, from a technical standpoint there, we've made it possible for a retailer to be able to sell it ideally in a six pack or even pull them apart and be able to purchase the bottles single, and that way they could try all three in one purchase.
Nice.
Either way, I think they'll be happy if they commit to one flavor too.
I think so. And I like the name Porch Sitting, because this is I have a Sunset Cider Club every Wednesday when the podcast goes live. We gather around, drink cider, listen to the podcast. Sometimes in the background we get a little noisy, but this is a good porch sitting cider for Sunset Cider Club out there.
Thank you. Yeah, and really that's kind of how the name came about. And originally, if you're just reading the ingredients and thinking about those, I wasn't sure if it would be seasonal, but honestly, it was one of our very first launched in the tap room, and the people have spoken, and it lasts year-round consistently, so it's definitely a flagship of ours.
Well, I'm liking those people there.
Well, you have to come up and visit.
I will. Now, who are the folks that are coming through your cidery? Are they tourists, or are they locals?
Yeah, so we have a great group of kind of each little demographic between our locals that sit at our taproom bar or at our tables, kind of enjoying the ambient area that we have there. We've kind of made it fit to the theme of just kind of a romantic cider mill, cider house. Mm. And
in the Onion Building.
In the Onion Building, converted. So, you know, if I mess up on a cider, something goes wrong, I just say it's because the old onion in the atmosphere. So it's not my fault. But, yeah, so we've got a great group of local people that enjoy the product and have supported us since the beginning. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I'd mentioned, we're on that busy road up north to the lakes and the woods. And so we get people traveling there in the spring and the summer for lake life, people in the fall for camping, and we have a great wine and vineyard experience further up north Michigan that's on the way to, and people out of state that are just visiting West Michigan. So a good handful of a little bit of everybody.
Yeah, right on. It's interesting, the cinnamon's kind of kicking up a little bit now, and it coats your mouth. Again, I always recommend drink that cider, let it sit in the cup a little bit and sit in your mouth and let it acclimate to you too, because it will really it'll grow, it'll expand the experience.
Yeah, definitely, as it warms up a little bit too. It's a little cool right now. You know, I'm a big fan of subtleties in our additions that we're adding to our cider. And again, you know, that's just a balance between the apple first and foremost, and then the natural ingredients that we're adding. And I feel, You know, if it is subtle, sometimes you might wonder what it is, but as it warms up or as you taste it, mm-hmm. you kind of get to enjoy it more.
Yeah.
Whereas in my personal opinion, if it's all right in your face right away, it can become, for me, too much towards your last sips. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely love allowing the apple to be a contender on the palate for your entire experience.
So how quickly are you turning over your ciders? Is it a six-week process? Are you doing much bottle conditioning, letting it, you know, sit a bit in this beautiful packaging?
Yep. So a lot of, well, let's put it this way, a little bit of everything.
Okay.
Our youngest ciders would be in that 7 to 8 week range mm-hmm. from fermentation to whether it's a bottle or a keg. Mm-hmm. And then we have ciders as old as 4 years, and those ciders are a little higher in ABV. Some of them have gone through an oak barrel and pulled back out in glass. So a good range of different ages and different styles and different fermentations.
So you're doing a little bit of modern and traditional.
Exactly. And so, our modern is what I define simply by conforming to some of the maybe popular flavor profiles, such as, I guess maybe I wouldn't define it by the word flavor, but rather ingredients. And so our modern ciders have added ingredients such as hops or vanilla and cinnamon mm-hmm. or raspberries. Mm-hmm. And our traditionals, or at least closer to traditional ideas, are... our cider that is purely fermented apples, designed by the varieties of apples based on their measurements of acidity, sugar, mm-hmm. and then even taking that into aging in different barrels, toasted barrels, bourbon barrels, neutral mm-hmm. barrels.
Mm-hmm. Now, are those ciders in 750 mil bottles?
Yes, okay. Those are. Which we don't distribute, but they are available at the tap room.
Okay. So I kind of look at traditional and modern in terms of the conditioning period. So I would consider these ciders modern because of the turnover time, and the traditional is something that actually does get to condition for a while.
Yeah.
And a cider made in September and then tasted the following September is going to be really different.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like that's what you're doing there.
Yeah.
And are you using different apple varieties for that?
Yeah. So, you know, as I'd shared earlier, the varieties of apples we have access to aren't necessarily cider-specific apples. You know, you grab a Mac, Jonathan, or a Northern Spy, they're as old as almost any apple you can name, but not necessarily cider-specific. So... what we do for these traditional styles that we're making is trying to find the apples that are maybe full of higher acidity levels rather than so much sugar. I think as a lot of, I guess, cider makers know, but maybe not our cider fans, is, you know, if you just find an apple full of sugar, that ferments to alcohol. And what do you have left? Not a whole lot. And so we're finding these varieties that are got a little bit more than sugar, a little more acidity, maybe a little more bitter, a little more sharp, and those varieties will go into our more traditional style offerings.
So what's the difference in how you make that those two different ciders? The upfront difference.
Sure.
Are you doing maceration with that, the more traditional style at all?
So upfront, right away... we'll use a different yeast. We'll use a yeast that is going to be better for a nice low temperature and slow fermentation. Just take its time. That would be one difference right away. And then, of course, as you get beyond that, it depending on where the intention with that liquid, it might go through oak. It might go back into glass. But it's the time factor. We let that sit, and then we taste through a panel of folks at the tap room and different friends and family and different professionals in Michigan, you know, giving us their feedback on what we're getting. And then there's the blending. There's a lot more blending when we're more dealing with the liquid coming from these more acidic, more interesting mm-hmm. apples.
So temperature, yeast, and blending.
Yeah.
Blending afterwards versus these ciders that we have in front of us here are blended pre?
Yeah, those are mostly blended right through the process of pressing them. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, exactly.
And what kind of press are you using now?
We're using Squeeze Box.
Yeah. That seems pretty popular.
It is.
Michigan.
We've got the bigger one. We were fortunate to find, basically, it was brand new, but we found it used. As I would encourage anybody is to find used equipment.
Well, what's the story behind that?
The story behind that is we wanted a squeeze box. We thought that would work best for kind of our workflow and intentions.
Which is like an accordion.
Yeah. And so there was a lot of Googling taking place in the search of this, and there's a couple sites that used fresh cider equipment. We found it in Maryland. Actually,
Maryland,
and picked it up in Annapolis.
We're recording right now.
Yes.
You picked it up in apples too? No. No. Wait, what, you picked it up? What did you just say there?
Yeah.
Let me have another sip of cider.
Yeah, is that what, the town, the Navy town on the coast?
Oh, Annapolis.
Yeah, okay.
Annapolis.
That is what I said.
You said it right, yeah.
I think I was thinking something else, but
Annapolis,
that is where I picked it up. In 2014, I drove about 10 hours out here to pick it up, and now I'm back doing CiderCon 2018. Pretty fun.
Yes, it is. Wow. So looking back, would you have done anything different?
Absolutely. I would, always encourage more plans, more definitive plans. Where are you going? What are your intentions? And who's your customers?
Okay.
I mean, it's easy to say everybody that'll buy it, but if you know who your customers are, that, I feel, better defines your direction with your liquid. It's easy to say, I'm going to make a little bit of this, a little bit of that, for a little bit of everybody. Well, in some capacity, we do that, but there's a story with Ridge. There's a story with the apples being grown on the Ridge and how we process them into this beverage. And if we can understand who our customers are, we can better understand our intentions with the liquid.
So know your target audience.
Yes.
Before you sign on the dotted line.
Absolutely. I think I even heard it today. You know, I have the passion for this real fruit, these natural ingredients. And for example, if I didn't know my target audience, and, you know, there's a great group of people that love something sweet, and there's a great group of people that love something dry. And if I wanted to please, for example, folks that wanted something super sweet, well, then I could add a bunch of sugar to it. But that's not something that I necessarily enjoy or believe in or have passion about. So therefore, if I were to continue that notion of pleasing them in that manner, I might find myself not enjoying what I'm doing so much because I'm not doing what I originally enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, circling back, it's knowing your target audience.
Yeah. Has it changed in the time that you've opened to where you are now, your target audience? What you initially thought it would be?
It's developing now more than ever as we kind of have grown over the last couple of years,
mm-hmm.
really zeroing in on who we are with the identity as the liquid, as a brand, and a representation of the Ridge area. Mm-hmm. I feel it's still changing. I think it'll continue as we have, different customers and fans of cider coming through their acquiring of their tastes. You know, that's always evolving. But our hopes is, you know, with our modern ciders that we're capturing a greater audience of people,
mm-hmm.
and that they would soon to love or enjoy the product that we're developing,
mm-hmm.
and follow us along to maybe some more of the more interesting varieties of apples that in turn make more interesting ciders, and follow us along to more traditional pure cider that is made solely from apples.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'll always have both.
It's all good.
Yeah.
In Ciderville. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. There's a changeable palate out there, and there is a drive for always to be seeking what's new, which I think really moves that modern cider style out there to create something new, a new recipe. Do you do that often, or you have these three? You have the porch sitting, the hops, and the raspberry. Do you do like little one-off, I don't know, chai tea or anything like that?
We do get a little crazy.
Before I
take that step, I ask myself why I'm doing it. You know, am I doing it for fun? Am I doing it because there's a story behind it? And what I mean is, am I using chai, or am I using hops or different ingredients because it's down the road, or because it's a cousin, or because it's grown in Michigan, or because, you know, why am I doing it?
Right.
So that's the first step.
Yeah.
But to answer your question, the answer is yes. We do get a little crazy, and where we do that mostly is at the tap room.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of our area for testing out, one, having fun. And then two, testing out what are people responding to?
Mm-hmm.
Because at this point, we do have people coming through that are new to cider and have been around cider for a while and want something a little more funky, a little more dry and interesting, as opposed to maybe added fruits.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had fun in the sense of adding coffee, bananas, other fruits and spices to our cider, which really, there's always a group of people that do enjoy that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, again, on the traditional side, we're getting some of the more bitter, sharp, acidic varieties of apples coming through in a basic, more of a traditional hard cider, meaning just apples, people mm-hmm. seeking that out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting. And though I'm not behind our taproom bar at all times, I do go there, you know, several times within the month. And it's fun for me to see the development of people that I've seen there since the beginning and what they started with and now what they're asking for. And a quick example would be, you know, we've got some folks that have been there from day one and they only wanted my fruit added ciders. Like the raspberry, the strawberry, the blueberry.
Okay.
And we're getting those fruits seasonally, of course, and also within the West Michigan area. And they are good. But now they're asking, they come in, they sit down and said, give me just apples, give me dry, give me plain. And I said, my, you have grown up. And I'm so proud of you.
Yeah.
And I only say that because that's what I personally enjoy.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, you know, you're changing the palate out there one step at a time. It takes people a while to realize that. I think sweetness tires the palate.
Sure.
You know, there's only so many candy bars. Even though you see that big candy bar bag and you want to gobble it up because you're like a chocolate aficionado.
Yeah.
After a while, your mouth gets tired.
Sure.
And so that's the beauty of having a dry cider. It actually clears out your palate, your taste buds, and opens up those sensors in a way that the sugar will just cloud it up.
Yeah, that's right.
So it makes absolute sense in that way.
Mm-hmm.
How do you explain cider? Somebody walks in the door and they say, hey, what is this cider? What's cider?
And boy, have I heard that a lot.
I'm sure you have.
Yeah. So first thing I say, so you haven't had hard cider before. I make a confirmation that they have not consumed.
So you ask a question
yes.
to a question. Okay.
Yes, exactly. And that'll almost every time I'll lead off asking them that question. And if they have, I'll ask them kind of what they're coming from. So I kind of know what they've experienced. And from there, I let them know that, well, honestly, I'll hear, well, I've come from a cider that tends to be a lot sweeter. Whether they like that or not, that wasn't my question. But then I'll convey to them, you know, what is the Ridge? Because that's where Ridge Cider resides.
Space, yeah.
Yes. And I let them know that we're using the fruit that's being harvested from this area.
Mm-hmm.
And the process is both similar to beer, to wine, a little bit of both. in terms of the fermentation. I let them know that at least our approach to cider is we're fermenting the natural sugar to basically a zero residual sugar, mm-hmm. Which provides a very clean and crisp taste that they may not have experienced in the past. Mm-hmm. But if you're coming from something that was fruity, something that had some spices in it, we have those options available too. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of walk them through our process and how we're kind of set apart from what I at least have been exposed to, and let them know what kind of in an anticipation what they they're going to experience. Mm-hmm.
So you engage a person in a conversation, which really works. I'm a headlines kind of person. I get a lot of information in my life and, you know, have run a business. So, you know, that kind of CEO model, I headlines only. So if you're going to shorten, what's a short answer for cider?
For our cider, it's going to be clean, it's going to be crisp, and it's going to be natural. And I guess the last word I would use is refreshing.
Refreshing.
And I use that word because I hear that a lot out of the customers.
And I would say that this porch sitting here, for me, is very refreshing after a day of tasting a lot of different ciders. And, you know, it's exactly what my taste buds are saying. Thank you. Don't overwhelm me right now.
Great.
Right?
Yes. And that's our goal. I appreciate hearing that.
Yeah. What's the five-year goal for you?
Five-year goal? Be true to our intentions with the liquid. Share our cider a little bit wider within the state of Michigan.
A little distribution?
Yeah,
out.
Yeah, okay. Within the state of Michigan right now. Just awareness, not only, of course, for the brand, but awareness for the style of cider we're making and the education that goes behind that from a consumer standpoint.
Well, those are good goals because it takes a lot to get that apple into that cup.
Sure does.
And I really appreciate the work that you're doing. I love the way you're educating people and your passion. I mean, people out there in Ciderville right now, sitting across from this guy, you could just feel his passion and pride in what you're doing. And that speaks volumes. Oftentimes with a product that you're asking people to, pour back and savor, it's not necessarily what's in the glass, but it's the person who's making it.
Sure.
So tip of the glass to you for what you're doing.
Thank you.
Best of luck with Rich Cider. I can't wait to see that movement forward and out into the field more.
Yeah, thanks so much.
I really appreciated Matt's passion for cider and how he's like caught his game, if you will. Like he's in his stride and doing exactly what he wants to do. And there's nothing better than seeing somebody who is in that type of place in their life. I did not get to try any of their traditional ciders. Actually, next week when I am in Michigan, we are going to be on the cider tour and going to Rich Cider. So I hope to see Matt and hopefully get a taste of that traditional cider that they're making too. And I will give you an update on that then. The big news for Rich Cider right now is that they have three ciders in cans. You could get the berries, the porch sitting, and the raspberry right now. Go to the store right now if you're in Michigan and go get it. And make sure when you're passing through Grant, Michigan, to stop at the tasting room there. It is apple blossom season where I am hanging now. Actually, they're almost ready to pop. I've just seen that little bit of color coming out of the bud, and it just brings sunshine my way. I imagine for you too, right? And you can feel the buzz in the air. There's so much activity happening, and there is just increasingly more activity online for me, discussing all kinds of conversations across the map with people out there in Ciderville. So thank you for those who reach out, and a big tip of the glass to you all. It's quite exciting. In fact, just while I was editing this here podcast, there was a little conversation going on about cider nomenclature with Alpenfire out in Port Townsend, Washington. And we're just kind of like lamenting about how people are still confused about cider and how they call cider makers cider brewer, which is just does not make sense. Cider's fermented. Boom, boom, boom. I'm going to have to write a song about that. That'll be fun. Maybe that'll happen at Glen Camp. I'll bring my little Shakeray eggs and we'll see what we could do. Oh, here comes another email in. So it's busy out here, and thank you for listening, because without you, I would be one lonely girl in this little recording room, except for the Talking Palms, of course. They do keep me company, too, but they're very mischievous, as one might expect a palm to be. Life is good, and I hope it's true your way, too. And before I go, do remember to tell your good friends, family, acquaintances, anyone you might know about the Totally Cider Tour heading to Normandy. There's still time between now and May 31st to get onto the top of the list. After May 31st, it's going to be a waiting list only. So check it out. Go to ciderchat.com to the Totally Cider page, and I hope you can come along. It's time for me to stretch my legs and go put my face up to the sunshine and just breathe in May. So thank you for listening. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville. Yeehaw!